Transform Together, das Podcast-Meetup. Von und mit Johannes Schartau und Holisticon.
Welcome to episode 7 of Transform Together, the Holisticon podcast meetup. I'm Johannes Schartau and today I'm talking to Silke Noll. Silke is a globally recognized certified seminar facilitator, trainer and consultant specializing in intercultural competencies, communication and team building. With multiple published books on intercultural communication, she is an authority on the topic. She also holds a diverse range of certifications, including being an accredited Kanban trainer by Kanban University. It's morning here in Germany, but it's nighttime where Silke is because she lives in New Zealand. Silke, thank you for joining us and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Johannes. You can see the sun's going down here right now.
For the people listening, Silke has this really nice view behind her. And as she just said before we started recording, you can actually see the ocean from, I can see it from my standing desk here. I can see the ocean in New Zealand. That's really cool. I'm really excited to have you, Silke. You are an expert on cultural, all things culture, as well as really well-versed in things like Kanban and flow and agile. And I thought we could start by just asking the question, what is culture? And let me just kind of illustrate why I'm asking this, because I often work with organizations and then they have some kind of culture initiative that's going on. And I always get the feeling that people have really different understandings of what culture is and what they're trying to achieve there. So is there any kind of definition of what culture is, or what is your definition of culture?
There are a few definitions that I quite personally like. One would be like, it's like a fish in the water and the fish only recognizes what the culture is once it's not there anymore. Then I like a definition which is, it's the software of the mind. And another one, it's how we do things here. They all tell a story. And I think we all have our very own culture that we bring with us, and that is made out of all the cultures we have experienced in our life. I always talk about our individual backpack. We grew up in a generation, in a gender. We worked in different organizational cultures. We grew up in a country culture. And there are different cultures in regions and maybe even in a city or in the village that we are from. And all of these experiences form who we are as individuals. And this is how we look at the world. And now you start working in an organization and you realize, this is weird. This isn't what I've known before. Like, you've worked in a government organization and you accepted to start in a startup. Things are different. So your own cultural backpack is like, oh, this is not part of my portfolio. What's happening here? And that culture will form again your own portfolio. So in intercultural terms, we look at culture in relative terms and never in absolute terms. So there is not that culture or that culture. Like, Germany is not like that. And when you have an intercultural training about New Zealand, there is no absolute term about classifying New Zealand. There are some values that are pronounced, and you can figure those out also for organizations, because the patterns or the values that we look at have been really well researched by interculturalists, and they are really good as a guidance. But then it really depends on where you are coming from and what you've experienced in your own world. So it could be that you step into a new culture and you find it's really similar, because, for example, it's a similarly hierarchical culture, or you might experience, oh, this is weird because I haven't expected that I can actually, they talk straight to their boss. This is really awesome. This is really awkward, you know? And how do they, there's no respect how they talk to their boss. This is what we do, right? And so I think it's how we do things is quite a good definition, and all the other three that I've explained. But for me, it goes a lot deeper, because it is always relative to where you're coming from and never absolute. So it's difficult to define a culture in absolute terms.
That's super interesting. And I always like to ask the guests the questions that I hear that maybe puzzle me or that I have difficulty answering. So I'm going to pose the question to you. I'm super interested in what your answer is going to be. And that question is, I've heard people say something like, can't we all leave this aside and just rationally focus on the task? So can we just ignore the culture and just be task oriented? And this culture thing feels kind of wishy-washy, intangible in a way. What would you say to that? So can we just leave it aside? Would that be a good thing to do? Or how do we deal with this?
The people that say that, they're absolutely right. It is absolutely unconscious. It's not something tangible, as you said. And that makes it so tricky. But the outcomes are very tangible. Because you can just lose a contract with your client because of cultural issues. You could be denied for a job because of cultural issues. Or you could not nail a project because of intercultural projects. So it's actually quite tangible. The thing is that we like to describe cultures as an iceberg. And I guess probably most of those that listening to this podcast know this concept also from other areas. It's quite well known. So for those that don't know, the meaning is the top of the iceberg is very small compared to the rest, which is underneath the ocean. And it only touches the superficial things that you can see, like food, behaviors, do's and don'ts, art, things like that. So things that you can see that are obvious in our culture. Anything underneath the surface in the ocean are things that we cannot see. And that's things like our beliefs, cultural values. Like the values are one of the deepest things that are very unconscious. Like religion plays a part here sometimes as well. So it's really deep things that we cannot observe. And they are very subconscious, unconscious. Actually unconscious, and they determine what happens on top of the surface. When there is a clash with cultures, that happens underneath. It just happens as a clash. You're like, oh, what the heck's that person doing? It's like, you know?
Yeah.
But it's very emotional. And in that moment, emotions there are under the surface. You wouldn't get it up to the surface and wonder, so what caused this behavior? Why did this actually happen?
I've noticed just this week that I have a client who's international, and nowadays we work, lots of us work from home or, you know, in some kind of remote setting. And it would be totally normal for me in the morning to talk to someone from the company in Southeast Asia, and then in the afternoon to someone from the Americas, and then in between people from all over Europe. And it's just so accessible. But in such an organizational setting, do you have any examples of what you just talked about, the culture, the values, the beliefs, how that might cause some kind of conflict or friction in the way we interact in this global setting that we have nowadays?
I have a very personal experience from coming to New Zealand. And then I have a very recent one, which actually shows how a project can fail because of these. So my personal experience, and I talk about this often, I must say, it's one of what was one of those key moments, really, in intercultural terms. I came into New Zealand, and my first employer was a testing consultancy, and I really found it really weird that they were like basically white men behind glass, so it looked like an ivory tower and a glass box, and everybody else on the bench was outside. And that wasn't something I was used to from Germany, I must say. And then I was like, this is weird. And then I asked my colleagues on the bench, which were mainly from the Philippines. They said, oh, this is normal. There's nothing we would observe. Like, this, yeah, just how, yeah. Nothing weird about it. And then I had another thought. The thing is that I really didn't expect this in New Zealand because New Zealand is expected to be an egalitarian country. And so after some thoughts, it came to me that it's actually an English organization. They brought their English culture with the company, even though I was working in New Zealand. And the English culture has a class system. So right. It's actually quite hierarchical. And this is what I observed, because in Germany, we have a very egalitarian culture as well. Like, of course, everyone would say now that is listening, but I'm in an organization, you know, there are hierarchies as well. But the thing in Germany, you can talk straight to your boss and tell him your opinion. And that is really an egalitarian
right.
Feature, right? We just do that. And when I talk to an English boss, like level, they're like, who's this woman? You know?
How dare she interrupt?
Hell yeah. And so that was the difference that I, and it's a subtle sentiment, you know? And I just got it on the surface because of my intercultural background. And I was like, this must be something cultural. And so I digged into it. And yeah. So that was super interesting for me as someone new to New Zealand. There was an organization I worked in, which was actually not representing the local culture. And the other example is from a training I recently ran. It was culture specific about Australia. The situation could as well be New Zealand. The situation really is very similar, where some, let's say, Northern Europeans with a rather linear perception of time, where, you know, you've got project timelines and you do one thing after the other, and you have a conversation structure, which is question answer. At the very beginning of the training, they voiced clearly, so we've got this really detailed project plan, Silke, but the Australians, they don't seem to like to commit to it. How can we get the Aussies to commit to this project plan? And of course, as a trainer, you cannot give the answer at the beginning. You say, cool, keep this question until the end. And maybe some things pop up in between.
There's a likelihood of us gaining some insights that will lead you to be able to answer your own question.
And the beauty was that the other, like some other participants, were actually from different countries in Asia who have a completely different perception of time. Much more flexible, more cyclical, actually. It would be more closer, actually, to the Kanban concept of start at the last responsible moment rather than planning things out. And at the end, it was really cool to see that they themselves figured out, hey, maybe, because that was one organization, they had actually gained a project in Australia, like a real project. And they were like, well, maybe we should we should get together and figure out this plan that you have. And we'll figure out together how we can make this digestible for the Aussies. Yeah. So, and that was a perfect outcome, how you can take like strengths of different cultures and improve the outcome.
So it's not just a clash. It can be this mutually beneficial, or where you have some kind of synergy of different cultures that enhance each other and make the result much better.
If the consciousness is there. And that is when it is really worthwhile in investing into an intercultural training. So either culture specific, as in this case, specific to a different country, or there are also cultural awareness trainings. And they are pretty cool when you have, for example, teams with a lot of cultures in it as a type of team building or so, for example, or even when you have mergers of two organizations. Yeah. With different cultures, which is pretty, I don't think there has ever been a merger between two organizational cultures that are similar. So,
yeah, I think you're right. That's not what you usually hear, right? So we acquired this company and it's working out beautifully. No issues.
We love these guys. Yeah, it's just great. Like, it's just what
perfect
we needed.
Right. I have another question. So I had to work in Russia for a while. That was maybe 12 years ago or something like that, even a bit more. So I had some intercultural training, and what they told me was that people in Russia want to look very determined and kind of stern and want to show that I got this. And they were kind of showing pictures of politicians and the German or European ones were all smiling, looking friendly, and then the Russian ones looked kind of, you know, serious, and I'm about to engage in this task, and I'm going to completely dominate this. I actually went there and talked to people. I just because I met some Russians, and I asked them. I tend to smile quite a bit. How does that make you feel? And they told me, well, we know you're from the West, but so that it's okay, or we know how to kind of interpret this. But if you were Russian, then we would probably think that you're disabled or something like this. All right. So, and the thing was that for me, it was so difficult to switch it off, or just at the same time, I stayed a couple of weeks, and I noticed that just walking around, it made me depressed because people just looked so closed off and not friendly, not hostile, but on the way there. How do you deal when you're deal with a situation like this, when you're being exposed to a culture, you feel like there's no fit? Do you have any tips for that? Should I just do my best to adapt, or is there a way that I maybe can bring my own culture to this that is digestible for the people in the other culture? Any kind of advice that you would give in this situation?
Difficult, because you had to work there, right? So it worked, right. has thrown you there. The good thing is that you had a training, so you knew what you were expecting, and you were able to talk to them. Imagine someone who didn't have this.
Right, caught completely unaware.
Yep. So, yeah, that would have been a more difficult situation still. But I mean, the only thing really that helps is this consciousness, I guess. And I would probably talk about it and ask questions a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Or also just like, as anecdotes, also say how we would do this in Germany, or ask, so would you like to see how we do this? It's like, you know, the thing I wouldn't give a culture specific training about Russia, probably, because it's not one of my specialties. But from what I know and what I've heard, because as intercultural trainings, we get quite a good training ourselves about different cultures, is that they are actually, and that might sound like a contradiction. They are more relationship oriented than task oriented, which is what we Germans are.
Right. Yeah.
So they are in their heart and under the shell, actually really warm people.
Yeah.
There is this intercultural concept of peaches and coconuts.
Tell me more. That sounds
you
fascinating.
Don't know that one.
Peaches and coconuts.
Yeah. So how would you describe a peach and a coconut?
I'm assuming it has to do something with the shell, right? So a coconut has a tough shell, a peach really delicate, but there's a pit in it that is maybe hard. Is that getting close?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the coconut has a hard shell, but then it's very soft inside, mm-hmm. and it's quite easy to get to the inside. And the peach has soft skin. Mm-hmm. So it feels like it's really easy to approach, but then it has a really hard inner side, which is really hard to approach. So I guess when you look in relative terms, which I talked about at the beginning, this is a really cool example, actually. I guess the Americans would be on the very peachy side.
Right, yeah.
So now the Germans would be on the coconut side. But then when you compare them with Russians, maybe the Germans would be more on the peachy side and the Russians would be more on the coconut side.
Perfect. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe I would dig out these kind of things and try to find out actually about more of that culture. And I mean, who doesn't like people who are interested in their culture?
Mm-hmm.
And as long as people understand that you are interested in their culture and how you work and how you are, I think this is a door opener. And then you can feel more comfortable with them individually, even though maybe the overall culture is still a bit suspect. And maybe even after a while, I know really a lot of people who love the Russian culture.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is that I can make this easier for me and other people by being curious and asking questions about cultural differences. And so I'm wondering, because you were saying it helps to be conscious of my own culture.
Totally, yeah. And that is a very, very important point, maybe, Johannes, that we need to hold on for a moment.
Yeah.
Because a good intercultural training isn't one that teaches you about that other culture and about the do's and don'ts. It's a training where you actually also understand that your own backpack. I talked about it at the beginning, like, where are you coming from? What is your cultural lens through which you look at the world? And only then can you actually understand other cultures.
What water am I swimming in?
Yes.
What does it taste like? What does it look like?
Yes,
Yeah, okay.
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is more important than understanding do's and don'ts, because if you understand those and learn them by heart, you can still get into massive cultural conflicts.
Because you're not aware of what you're doing or what you maybe assume everyone values.
Because you will still looking at the other and you won't reflect about yourself. Like, intercultural competency is about self-reflection and understanding your own emotions and what's coming up in a certain situation and being able to step back and assessing them in intercultural terms. Does
It's
that make
almost,
sense?
yeah, absolutely. It's almost like self-awareness and reflection are good skills to have in general, like good activities to engage in. So I have one more specific question, and I would be really interested to hear your opinion on this, because you're also active in the agile, lean Kanban space. Are there any kind of organizational cultures where it is more tricky to start working that way, or where we have more tensions? Or the other way around, maybe any specific organizational cultures that lend themselves really well to this specific type of working.
What type of agile do you
Nice. You caught me.
mean?
I don't I I think the self-awareness thing starts right here. What am I talking about? All right, so when I think of Kanban, one of the first things is that at least I learned is that you kind of want to create transparency first, or you want to have some kind of overview of what is happening here. And then I noticed that in some companies, this is already where it gets difficult. Okay, so it's like you have an unprecedented amount of insight into the actual work and the flow of work. And now it would be possible for people to talk openly about this, but maybe there's some kind of resistance, or people are kind of shocked, or they kind of want to go back to the old away. Is that something that you're also noticing, or what's your experience here? How would you deal with this?
I actually have a lot of thoughts about this topic, but maybe let's make it a bit broader, not just take about Agile and Kanban, and not just ways of working, because they are also like associated to Agile, but ways of working also in terms of project management, for example. Yeah. And so there are a lot of things that go on in my mind all the time. And I'm like, I think that we should discuss more. I don't have a solution for them. But I think there are tricky things to consider when we are introducing these things, you know? Like, for example, perception of time, right? There are cultures which have a linear perception of time, as we already said. We had this in the Australian example with the Northern Europeans. Very linear, one thing happens after the other. And then we have cultures where actually we can do more things in parallel. These are usually the cultures of South Europe, South America. Like, I always have this Italian picture of an Italian in my mind, you know, that is driving a car. I've got actually my concrete Renata, my friend, in Tuscany. She can drive a car by being on the cell phone all the time. And it feels like she can do all other things at the same time as well, while also take it the attention to myself who's on the passenger seat, you know. And this is they even have a value for that, l'art di arrangiarsi, so the art to make this all happen at the same time. It's not the right explanation, it's not the right translation, but something like that. And the art to make bio or something like that is, I think, is the translation. So it's not even only a value, it is an art in Italy.
Sorry, I just there was a time I have an Italian friend. The first time I went to visit him, that was also the first time that I drove a car in Italy, and he was on the passenger seat. And then there was a car that was really slow in front of us, and then my friend said, "Just pass the car. He's probably on his cell phone and drinking espresso." And I thought he was joking. And then I passed the car and looked inside, and he was on his cell phone drinking espresso while driving his car. So it's exactly what you're talking about. So I saw
Yeah,
this.
exactly.
I can f confirm it is true. And now I'm learning, okay, this is an art form. Okay, this is being celebrated. It's not just about you can do this, but it's one of the cultural values where just like, hey, good for you. You're doing well. Look at you handling all those things at the same time.
Exactly.
Nice.
And so this is a parallel perception of time, right? And this Italian, the stereotype Italian in my mind is just that example. And then there are cultures like in Asia, also indigenous cultures that have more of a cyclical time, where like when they approach a project or so, they're like, let's sleep over this a few nights. And then after that, oh, maybe actually this first task that looked so important, it's actually not that much. So we'll do this first, and this we'll decide about this later. And yeah, so and it's like it's cyclical. It can only come back like reincarnation, you know? And so you are trying to tackle a project with these guys. What was your original question?
I think the original question was, I'm trying to kind of understand if there are organizational cultures that lend themselves more to kind of this agile way of working. And
Yeah.
I'm just maybe what I'm trying to say is, for example, in Scrum we have sprints, or even in Kanban we might use a cadence. And I'm wondering if this maybe would this like from an like a dumb outsider's perspective, would this align more with the cyclical culture that you're talking about?
Yeah, so I think like this project management, the classical project management probably comes from a Western culture originally, yeah.
Right.
It might blend in well in hierarchical cultures, even though they might be cyclical. So I'm just throwing lots of thoughts from intercultural. I've got like there is
Great.
when there is one situation, there it's not linear. When there is a situation, there are lots of boxes popping up in my brain at the same time. But then, you know, when you're starting with Scrum, it's still very rigid. The cyclical people won't like this either.
All right.
And
Yeah.
when I look at, you know, that in Scrum or like not Scrum, let's say iterative approaches, it happens so often that we won't get the things done at the end of the sprint and we roll them over.
Never heard about this. Never. That's
Yeah,
I
exactly.
yeah.
So the Kanban explanation would be resource versus flow efficiency, because we cannot know what happens on the way because we are resource efficient, you know, and there are wait times and we cannot plan for the wait times. And now we add this additional layer of perception of time with people where everybody has a different perception of time. So what does 2 weeks even mean? Yeah. It's for lots of Maori I talked to here in like our indigenous people in New Zealand, it was just too rigid for their ways of working. Then Scrum and the likes and SAFe, they come from the US, Western culture with a linear perception of time. And they are also very individualistic cultures where it's about the I. And one of the aims we have with the values that we have in Scrum is we need to be more team oriented. We need to have more cooperation. We need to work more together. So I'm asking the question, there 2/3 of the world population are collectivist cultures. It's all about the we. 1/3 of the world population only are individualistic cultures. The collectivistic cultures don't need us Westerners to tell them how to form a team.
Caught with the pants down, I would say.
Yeah. And with transparency, you're right. This is also a thing that might be tricky. You know, some cultures might not like that too much because it might feel like they're exposing themselves to their bosses, especially in hierarchical cultures. So there are a lot of aspects that are going on in my intercultural brain when I look at all these ways of working, you know, and we are not only talking agile, like all of them. And so now, Kanban trainer, why am I still passionate about it? What works really well for all cultures is last responsible moment. It still works. And you can still plan with Kanban and you can still be very flexible and you can totally adjust it to the context. And this is what I love. And that is kind of my passion nowadays, because that's why I do both of those. Because intercultural is all about context. You cannot just one situation in linear terms and get a solution out, and you can't in Kanban either. because it's so contextual. And that's why the two actually work together so well. Even with transparency, yes, Kanban is very transparent as well, but it's an evolutionary change management method. And you can do that very subtly. So without exposing the people.
So you don't have to come with a crowbar and break things open and push it through against resistance.
Yeah, it's not this. So we are working in this way now, and you guys have to be transparent now.
Mm-hmm. Kind of out of time. So I feel like we should always stop when it's the greatest. So I think we've reached that point. Do you know what a rug pull is? When when you feel like the rug has been pulled out underneath you. So I just had this moment when we were talking about, you know, the collectivist culture and individualistic. And I'm just like, yeah, of course. That makes so much sense. And then it's interesting how we're trying to, like, from these individualistic cultures, we're trying to export this to the rest of the world, just to be like, hey, this is something you should know, or this is something you should improve. And I know that we got this. Okay. just one more question. You said that one of the best things I could do is to create this self-awareness. Other than maybe, I'm imagining visiting intercultural trainings or maybe reading books about this, is there something else that I could do to enhance the skill of my awareness of my own culture?
It's a good question. It is really a hard one, you know, but yeah. It's like behavior is the hardest to change. And behavior comes from this consciousness. And just thinking about some easy ways, maybe you make a note on your laptop, or maybe you put yourself a task every day. I want to think once about my reactions, about my thinking, or have a buddy that reflects it to you. Yeah. It really is one of those tricky things. And I see a lot of people, a lot of their times are sitting in their brains and reacting without reflecting.
Yeah.
And I mean, it happens a lot. And we have so many topics around this. We have, you know, topics about biases, leadership, psychological safety, whatever. But maybe intercultural terms, if you get into this more, is actually a more tangible topic where you can train this. Now, kind of bridging a little bit from the start, that it's perceived often as very fluffy, intangible, with no outcomes. I think we've tackled some outcomes that can really go wrong. Like not hitting a contract, not getting your applications through and things like that, not hitting a project. But now even it might even be a tool for you to train this, like something concrete, because biases, it's really hard to train. It's even harder to train, I find, or be conscious about.
Awesome. I'm going to do the outro. Could you tell us about your books?
It's very lucky. The newest one I've got here, not the other two. So the newest one is Fettnäpfchenführer Neuseeland. So the English translation would be something like Faux Pas Guide to New Zealand. And I've learned that it's really misguiding when English people see the title. The first thing they see is Führer.
Oh, no.
And then the association is... Is that something like leader? It's like, no, I can also mean guide.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. So this is intercultural, right? Like this association, something it evokes in you. And it's like all of my books are very written in like in a storytelling way. I love this because I like to reach people. It doesn't help people if I'm writing books in an academic way and I can't reach them, because I find it's a really very important topic. And if more people understood this topic, it would actually make a better world. And that is my vision. So this is the newest book, and I've heard it's very readable. And it has a lot of depth and even insights about New Zealand that aren't out there in German culture yet. I'm very honored that I had my Maori business partner on my side, who I could ask a lot of questions. And I had three questions for an hour, and I thought we'll do in 10 minutes, and then we talk about everything else. We hit the hour, and he just kept talking, and there was so much coming out of it, out of him. So like, there's a lot of Maori perspective really in there that you will probably not read anywhere else, because it's a lot of the very white perspective. And I tried to get both of them.
Wow.
Yeah. Then the first book I read is my, before this book was my main book, Wahlheimat, New Zealand, or New Zealand, my adapted home, and got translated into English, New Zealand, my adapted home. And I keep thinking that the new book is better, but then I'm reflecting and I'm like, no, actually they are very different. So the Wahlheimat, New Zealand adopted home has more intercultural stuff in it. And the new book has more also typical New Zealand things in terms of landscape, few hidden, lots of hidden tips around where you could travel if you want to go a little bit off the beaten track. So what's not in the typical travel guides, but subtly hidden. And then the second book, Leben und Arbeiten in New Zealand, is like a booklet. It's very thin. I would recommend don't buy it, because I'm actually thinking about rewriting it. Yeah.
Just wait for the new
And
edition.
yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. So people should definitely check this out. We are going to link to your new book in the description of the podcast.
It's a really good Christmas present, and I actually like the I, there are a few reviews on Amazon that show that it's people that had no idea about New Zealand. They had no idea what intercultural stuff, and they were like, oh, this is actually, I really like this. This is a lot more than I expected. And that, of course, as an author, that makes you happy.
Thank you so much for your time. I'm going to close with telling you a bit about the sponsor, which is Holisticon, and then I'll give you an outlook about the next session. So at Holisticon, we put into practice what we discuss and transform together. We provide companies with holistic support throughout the digital transformation process, from strategy and technology to organizational change. We make our customers more resilient, establish a future-proof agile culture, create new business models, and inspire people with better services and products. If you're facing similar challenges or are wondering how you can implement the ideas from this session in your organization, please feel free to contact us. You can find all the information you need at holisticon.de. And don't miss our next Transform Together session on December 18th at 4 p.m. CET. So that's already next week. Because I will be talking to Valerio Zanini, and I was trying to squeeze him in before the year is over. He just published a fantastic new book on AI for product managers. And I'll talk to him about this. See you then.